I guess it's called the
Lodging law. Lodging law that allows them to arrest or ticketed people that sleep.
Right, you're thinking of, yeah, it's the, that's 647J, the state law, but it's, there was a resolution before the Berkeley City Council called the Homeless, Human, and Civil Rights Resolution, which actually had four parts and told the Berkeley Police Department not only not to enforce the lodging law, but to lay off all laws that criminalize homeless people for sleeping. A lot of people were at that protest I saw. What was your impression, Michael?
Well, great to see the amount of people that, especially, you know, this year, just everything is sort of, people are activating themselves and getting involved in many different things. In the radio station, we just see all these things going on.
Talking about the, I guess it was called Free Radio Berkeley, now it's Berkeley Liberation Radio?
Or? Yeah, 104.1,
uh-huh.
Liberation Radio.
You're a broadcaster there?
Yeah, I have a morning show. Yeah, there's the thing with the Star Wars or Space for Peace type of thing. There's Mamiya going on. There's the March for Marijuana on the 5th.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's a, it starts at UN Plaza on the 5th at 12 o'clock, and then at 4:20 they will march around, I think they're going to City Hall.
So you're talking about UN Plaza in San Francisco, right?
That'll be probably quite large.
Uh-huh.
Like it was last year.
Now getting back to this resolution at Berkeley City Council, I guess you have weekly city council meetings. Here in Santa Cruz, we have regular bi-weekly meetings plus a whole bunch of other little meetings, but
there's weekly, but every once in a while they don't have one.
But I understand they have one next Tuesday in order to pick up this resolution again. Is that right?
Well, we've gone through here a situation of trying to get the police department to have a good position, in other words, an anti-pepper spray position, and which they did the same type of thing, is that they had us go to meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting, and eventually they, the city manager and the police got their way. So I kind of think that's what's happening here.
You think, in other words, they're stalling because you had a fairly, I saw at least 80 to 100 people who were, looked to be there for the homeless protest, though I guess there were some people who were there for environmental issues and other things.
Just to look at it in the sense that I've been here for 35 years and I sort of am trying to analyze things. You have to look at it. This is organized by BOSS. It gets money from the county, the feds, and the city.
Now, Bob,
so they're not going to step on each other's toes.
You're talking about building opportunities for self-sufficiency, which is one of the kind of larger, it's a social service group, which is also involved in a couple of civil rights organizations. I guess Darren Noy is a worker for that. I spoke to him earlier. Yeah, I did talk to him. He said that they weren't planning another protest at city council meeting. It was sort of a one-shot deal, it looked like, which I thought was too bad because you had such a nice kickoff that now, for example, if you set up a tent city outside City Hall or some other pressuring tactic that goes on, and with homeless people that shouldn't be too hard to do, you might be in a real position to get some progress made here. What do you think?
Exactly, but like I was saying, is that basically it was organized by people that work for the city manager one way or another, and the city manager does not want to have this what this proposal of theirs go through right away, we'll say. Maybe he can be talked into it.
Huh. So in other words, you think that BOSS is kind of compromised in this situation?
Well, it always has been.
Huh. Can you give me a little bit more background? Because BOSS is one of the three key organizations behind the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project, which I initially didn't want to have too much to do with because it looked like another send us money for grants and we'll make like we're doing something, but not, you know, not much happening. But I heard that some activists were really involved in it, and we are getting involved in going to Sacramento around this in a protest May 20th through 23rd. But tell me a little bit more about BOSS and your experience with it.
It's sort of like my union. We have a rank and file. I've been involved in my union for 25 years. And there's definitely here, this is Berkeley, and there's a group of people that are sort of always pushing the city council or pushing our leadership to do what's right. So, okay, in Berkeley, they do a little bit more of what's right. But like you say, you were surprised that there wasn't somewhat of a follow-up action or a follow-up meeting or even an encampment. And that is really the main reason I feel they've done this, and it was led by BOSS, was to somewhat, they could see that there was a big problem this year, things were going to get out of hand, so they had the organization step in, go a step further, in a sense, than what they normally do, call big mobilization, bring it before the leaders, quote, in other words, the ruling class, and let the ruling class do what they usually do very good, is compromise mostly all of our actions.
They didn't compromise. They just didn't compromise. Michael, they just did nothing as far
as. Eventually, they will compromise. Nothing leads to when they see that we can't mobilize any more people to the city council, then they eventually compromise.
You know, I know that there was a lot of people mobilized in the early 90s against the sitting ban and Propositions N and O.
But what I'm saying is that
there was a lot of people mobilized sort of time after time, and that was just an attempt to hold the line against repression. This would be an attempt to actually move forward a positive step. You'd think that there'd be some...
The thing here is that we don't go to the city council and beg these leaders to do the right thing. Is that we mobilize in the street and we have sort of a pressure situation, encampment, whatever it is, people in the street that forces them. You don't, basically, this was a thing that was organized by them, that we go and beg them to do the right thing. It's always before in this situation, you had some kind of arm or some kind of muscle, we'll say, demonstration, whatever.
Right. No, I agree completely. We have the same situation in Santa Cruz where two organizations, the Monday Morning Group and the Green Party Working Group, our homeless working group, are, you know, essentially refusing even to go to city council and do what Boss did, Boss's Abuna Chima spoke very eloquently on Tuesday night, I thought, and, you know, I was glad to hear her speak, but again, I think it's actions that have to speak, and if they don't respond with at least letting this human rights resolution get a vote,
even
homeless people have to go out there and do some camping, or, you know, they have to come back.
I love Abuna Chima, but we are, in a sense, not necessarily on the opposite sides of the barricade, but we for sure are, you know, have different ways of approaching the problem. Mm-hmm. It amazed me that out of a lottery, you know, there was only about 10 people chosen, that she got chosen, which that just amazed me. But basically, she, since day one, and I've been part of this homeless movement, since day one of the homeless movement, she's been in there trying to, well, we can't say compromise it, but basically disarm it. That's her main role. She gets paid a bundle of money.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking six figures here. So basically, you know, they all do. The city manager, all of them get paid a bundle of money to social engineer us to become powerless. And this is just part of it, I feel.
Well, I understand on Friday, that's tomorrow, there's going to be a protest at Underhill. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, there now you have, it's sort of, actually, a very unusual thing that's happening here. You have the students.
At the University of California?
Yeah, but in a sense, because they have contact with the homeless through they have lawyers that go down there and help them out. They have people that are becoming welfare workers. They go down and help them out. There's a free clinic, that type of situation. But whatever the reasons is that students have jumped on this, and they have the same issue themselves. They're homeless themselves. They've jumped on this, and they want to, in this parking lot, where it is now, it used to be a parking lot and field, but due to the earthquake, they had to eliminate the field. So that gave them the excuse to build a big, big parking lot.
You're talking not about the students, but the university, right?
Yeah, but then the students are opposed to that, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
And they're having a mobilization, and they're inviting everybody from everywhere to tomorrow and Wednesday, I mean on Friday, to sleep out there overnight and continue over the next week, over the weekend.
So, and the issue here is both the university not build this parking lot, but and also is this a specific support for the homeless right to sleep at night without being arrested?
Oh yes, yeah, exactly.
So the students are doing kind of a joint protest.
A little bit unusual.
How can people get involved? Is there a number for people to call or an address for them to go to?
On that uphill thing?
Yeah,
but
Underhill.
It used to be that when they put out a leaflet, they always would put a little telephone number. Not true anymore. They didn't go through the orientation when I became a leftist. So, they don't put anything. I said, well, what about a web page? There is his number, which I don't have.
Yeah, actually, I have his number, and I can give that out.
He did give out his number on the radio show.
Oh, he did. That's talking about Chuck. Well, then perhaps I can give out his number. For those who want more information about this protest, do we know the name of the group that's throwing it? Does it have a name? The sleep-in protest being done by the university students and also against the Underhill, I guess, parking structure.
Yeah.
One contact person to contact is Chuck of Berkeley, and Chuck's number is 510-465-3069. Now, have you read the papers about the coverage of the Berkeley City Council protest? Was there much much in the Daily Cal or the Daily Planet, the two kind of
alternative
papers?
Actually, the stories didn't include the homeless issue. It included the situation like they couldn't, in here in Berkeley, the taxi cabs won't pick up anybody unless they're big fares, that type of thing. And then there was a couple of other issues. The homeless, there's a issue of a big housing unit. The Jewish church wants to, or temple wants to put in an enlargement of their facility in some other place in the north part of Berkeley. That was a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
So the homeless thing sort of got pushed to the, like you said, to the back and got pushed off.
Huh.
I think that, in a sense, what happens here is that the police, when it involves the police, the police have a tremendous influence over the council members. And they usually have a pretty good position there, but when they start talking to the police, I guess basically they become afraid.
Now, you say the Daily Cal and Daily Planet did do some coverage, but not much of the homeless issue? Is that what you were saying?
I don't think they did anything.
Huh.
Because it wasn't really, like you say, you waited around and there wasn't, and it didn't really get discussed.
Now, what's the address for people to go to if they want to join this protest up at the Underhill?
It's at Bowditch and Haste, between Haste and Channing.
Bowditch and Haste, between Haste and Channing on...
Bowditch. The four streets are College, Bowditch, Haste, and Channing.
College, Bowditch, Haste, and Shannon.
We're almost talking about a square block. It's almost like People's Park in the size.
Well, are you planning? You're planning to attend this protest?
Yeah, I'm going
to
go up there.
What I can do, perhaps, is we can get an update from you. I guess it starts when?
Tomorrow night.
Starts on Friday night. Maybe we can call you on Saturday morning and try to get an update for the Sunday show. We have a show on Thursday.
That would be good. Hopefully,
Sunday.
I will not be getting out here by the kid and everything. When you're raising a small child, they're homebodies. They come home from school and they don't want to go nowhere.
I hear you. Well, look, thank you. We've been talking with Michael Delacour, who's, an activist of long standing in Berkeley. You were getting busted at People's Park.
We do have an anniversary of People's Park coming up here on the 28th, or 29th.
That's next Sunday, right? Isn't that right?
Sunday after next, yeah.
Sunday after next, right. And that's of course, what, your
32nd.
32nd anniversary. Anything else to report about Berkeley in terms of police misconduct or how people are being treated on Telegraph?
Well, there was a guy, just amazing, that was killed over the weekend in Oakland by the Oakland police. He was beaten to death, and I can't believe that there's no outcry. I don't know if you heard about that.
I think I saw a little story on the Mercury
News. Completely clammed up, completely nothing about it. Unbelievable.
It's standard, unfortunately, but yeah.
I was literally beaten to death. That was the thing. He put up his hands, and then they beat him to death.
It's interesting. In Cincinnati, you've had these riots for the last week. Well, I guess they cooled it off with a curfew, and that seems to be one of the ways people get some attention is...
That's the sad part. I mean...
It is. I mean, you can try a protest all day long, and people just sort of look at you, but...
Yeah.
And
look at the kids in Palestine.
Or don't look at you. Also, there's the issue. I guess it used to be in India where charismatic leaders like Gandhi, who brought the message to people that by simply this massive nonviolence. And of course, in the 60s, the Freedom Riders were able to do that. I haven't seen too much.
I kind of think it's going to kids with
like
continue with like in Palestine.
At least
and
not
the kids in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the sad part of it. That's probably the hesitancy of the leadership. In a sense, they know the scene is really bad in Oakland, and here this atrocity happens, but they're worried about what would happen if they did something.
Now, you've had massive protests around KPFA to keep it open. Has there been any, has that had any effective result in terms of stopping the national board from its homogenization?
I'm not an expert on it, but to me, on the outside, it looks like it had an influence here locally. But what's happening in New York and all, it seems to continue. Way I somewhat see it to be a continuation, and hopefully won't lose it, but it's very possible we could lose the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, Michael, thank you for the update, and hopefully we'll be getting back to you in a couple of days for another update. And
by the way, one other thing. Uh-huh. There was KQED FM had a marathon here trying to raise money, and one day I heard that it cost them $28,000 a day to operate, and I was somewhat thinking, God damn, this station the one we're on, 104.1, we operate for about $15 to $20 a day. Now, that would be, let's say, around about 2,000 stations like we have. So I'd just like to present that.
And we have the same situation down here. We operate for a song, so it's great. Thank you again, and hey, get back to us, and Maybe we can do some tape exchanges with the station.
Right, or you, if you really want to get on the air, you could call on Wednesday and Thursday in the morning.
Well, what time would that be?
Around about 6:30, quarter to 7.
And what's the, what,
at six, but
what's the phone number for people to call?
It's 665-4852. It's 510-665-4852.
Hey, we've been talking with radio broadcaster and undaunted activist Michael Delacour.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that, of course, was an interview a couple days ago. Michael said he may try to call in during the show, probably in the next hour or so, to give us the update on what happened with the Underhill protest, which apparently got rained out one night and perhaps busted out the next. We're not sure. But there has been some good news. After an initial period of apparently not planning to follow up on the city council's delay and filibustering around the homeless and human civil rights resolution about ending the sleeping ban, BOSS, which is the kind of large, well-funded homeless social service organization in Berkeley, came to its senses, if you will, and decided to come back to city council on this coming Tuesday and bring back homeless people and support a second round of protests there up at city council on Martin Luther King at their city hall. And I, as I said, I'm probably going up there on Tuesday. I'll be leaving here in the early afternoon or mid-afternoon if anybody's interested in going. Or if you're interested in the next HUF meeting, the next meeting of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, give a call to 423-HUF, 423-4833. We had a very successful meeting on Friday where actually homeless people were actually in the majority. I was shocked. I was the only non-homeless person at the meeting. And there was some heavy skepticism about the city council and about other groups, though I did point out that if people want to, they can get involved with the Green Party Homeless Working Group at 475-2012. That's Nick Whitehead's number if you're interested in coming to that meeting. The next meeting, I believe, will be held in 2 weeks from today at his house, and you probably want to get in touch with him and let him know you're coming. Although, as I understand it, those meetings are still open to the public. And the other group that's working on these issues, or let us say, thinks it's working on these issues, and who knows, you know, one can never be sure. That's the Monday Morning Group. I've been mourning for them for a while. They excluded me 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, at the initiative of people like Lydia Blanchard. And they are working on a town meeting this summer where they have the city council. Crone, Porter, and Riley, I think, have agreed to this town meeting now that I'm not involved, and not that the camping ban cannot be brought up, though the sleeping sections of the camping ban are apparently not taboo at this meeting. And they meet every Monday. They were meeting at Baker Square at 8 in the morning, then they moved to the Holiday Inn. And at the last thing I heard from organizer Michael Schmidt, who's been a kind of a key organizer here, they're meeting at the Homeless Services Center, and that's going to be happening tomorrow, 8 o'clock in the morning, and that's out at Coral Street at Highway 1 and Highway 9 at the Homeless Services Center, probably in the bay where the food is served, though that may conflict with the eating because there is a kind of an early pseudo-breakfast. We don't want to call it a breakfast because it's not good enough to be a breakfast. It's pretty cheesy stuff. It doesn't really quite qualify for breakfast, but kind of like a coffee in the morning. But, yeah, that's happening tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning. And if you want more details on that, you can give a call to 423-HUF, and I will attempt to give you Michael Schmidt's number at the Chamber of Commerce, although you probably won't find him there on Sundays. But if you can't make it on Monday morning, or you decide not to because you don't think it's worth spending a lot of time on a group that doesn't seem to be doing much, you can call him, get information. I am not quite at the point where I tell people don't go to these meetings because I probably should be, actually, but I would encourage you definitely to come to HUF meetings and go to city council meetings and, again, attend protest rallies like the Rent Rage 2 coming up in a week at the town clock or the May Day rally, I believe, that's happening at Loudoun Nelson that I was speaking about earlier in terms of, I guess, there's some Communist Party speakers there. Or even to, if you want to raise a little ruckus at the SCAN meeting tomorrow, I think it's at 6:30 or 7 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson. It's open to the public, although you can't vote unless you are a SCAN member. Not that your votes will mean anything, mind you, because the steering committee can simply ignore what the majority does if their past history is any lesson on this issue. And if there are any SCAN members listening who disagree with me, I would encourage you to call in. I'll give you equal time, and you can explain how I'm wrong. And the same thing is true with any Green Party members. If you feel I am being inaccurate in my description of events, please call in and correct me. We can discuss this issue, and perhaps we should, in a public fashion. I know that at one point, Linda LeMaster, who was the chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force and a longtime homeless activist, or homeless herself at different times, called in, and we had a rather sparkly, crisp, and even spark-filled kind of debate on what's been happening recently at the Green Party Homeless Working Group. But again, it's not so much these small groups that count. I would say it's what you can do to help the city council get off its butt, and the way to do that is, I think, to organize among people you know and be ready to come out for a long protest. That's, I think, what needs to be done. A protest that parks its butt in front of the businesses so they can't ignore it, a protest that sets up a tent city at City Hall, a protest that doesn't go away until the issue is dealt with and is not schmoozed away by the politicians or by intermediaries who say, okay, you've made your point, now go away and we'll take care of it all, as traditionally done by people. Well, Sherry Connable did it back in 1990 and 1995. David Silva tried to do it in 1999, actually in 2000. And the Monday Morning Group, in its own way, is trying to do it now in 2001. And I don't think that's an effective approach. But I think that, you know, there are some things that these groups are trying to do, like raise the issue of how to get legal defense for homeless people who are facing tickets. What we really need, of course, is an injunction against the enforcement of the sleeping ban at all, or the camping ban. Let's jump to the camping ban, because the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban are the human rights issue that says, you know, thou shalt not sleep. The camping ban says thou shalt not put up a tent to protect your family in the rain. Both are equally abusive, equally criminal, although admittedly one, in a sense, is a clearer human rights issue, because I suppose you can argue that you could try to sleep in a under a lean-to somewhere. You wouldn't have to put up a tent, that there's a... Well, the problem with the whole camping ban is it's a ban. It's not really a regulation. There are no campgrounds in the city, so it's not really a way of saying, well, you can camp here, but you can't camp there. It's really a way of saying you can't sleep or camp anywhere unless you get out of town. And admittedly, there are some places on the edges of town. There's Henry Cowell. There's, of course, New Brighton Beach. But as the summer approaches, these places are going to become more difficult to use, although I understand from homeless folks using Henry Cowell, and I'd like to have this confirmed or denied, you can now use it for more than 2 weeks, provided you go away and come back. So you can kind of do the River Street refugee rotation trip that they did back in 1995-96 after Kennedy Rotkin and Daryl Darling threw them out of the Coral Street open-air shelter. And that works for some, but for a lot of people, a number of people died, a number of homeless people died, where previously at the Coral Street open-air shelter, it is my understanding that nobody died, that there were some drug overdoses, there were some drunken incidents, there was a muddy scene, that, you know, Karen Gillette and the Homeless Services Center didn't allow their bathrooms to be used at night, and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless under Paul Lee did not adequately provide for porta-potties and trash pickups, and the city didn't support them financially either, as they should have, and all those problems now make it somehow a taboo subject to set up a campground in the city. But it's not a taboo subject. It's a basic human need. Let's get that clear. Let's get that subject back on the agenda. And the way to put it on the agenda, I think, probably, is to just set up a tent city right at City Hall and have people willing to continue to restock that tent city to show up there again and again until the issue is dealt with, and have lawyers ready to defend it on the basis of necessity. That there is no other place for homeless people to go. The Armory closed on the 15th. That while there is one additional church open per night in this rotating stand-in-line, go to a church, get up early in the morning and leave approach, which is better than nothing for the, I guess it's 52 people it'll be that serves until the end of the month, and then there's going to be some 30-odd people it's going to serve throughout the summer, that compared to the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people out there, it's a drop in the bucket. And you have a law that makes it a $54 crime to sleep at night. So it's a real criminal criminalization of homeless people, an institutionalized hate crime against poor people. And though that's been said many times, it needs to be said many more times, probably in a loud, obnoxious tone of voice at a public gathering where some pious city council member is talking about all the wonderful things he's done for the city. Well, until they do this one thing, which is to decriminalize the sleeping function for poor people, they can take all their little gestures and stick them in a sack and hide it where the sun don't shine. That's my view on this issue. And you call me a radical, call me nasty, call me confrontational, call me violent. I don't think I'm violent at all. I think that kind of abuse against homeless people is the true violence, but that's my perspective. And it's true, I don't have a lot of love for Tim Fitzmaurice. I don't have a lot of hate for him either. I just regard him as another one of these politicians who is choosing not to exercise the power that he has and doing so with a bad political agenda that we have to change. If you want to help with this, give a call to Fitzmaurice himself at 420-5017. Actually, that's the number for the whole city council, 420-5017. And do it even though you've done it before. Do it again. And say, end the sleeping ban, act now, put it on the agenda, or explain to me why not, and leave your phone number. And, of course, call 423-HUFF and let us know that you've called, 423-4833. Again, the number for city council, 420-5017. And also, come to these protests, because at these protests, hopefully, we can begin the process of, I think what's needed is the kind of stuff that, well, here's an example of something that's happened in another part of the country, sleep out at Harvard University, demand for affordable housing, university accountability. This was a call for a Wednesday, April 4th sleep out to raise awareness about Harvard's role in the affordable housing crisis. And here's what they said. Residents, community activists, students, and people from the homeless community gather to call upon Harvard University to fulfill its responsibility to its community for the crisis in affordable housing. Since 1991, rents have increased by 77% in Boston. This dramatic rise in housing costs has forced many low-income families onto the streets or out of the greater Boston area. An estimated 26,000 elders, families, and individuals are at risk of becoming homeless in Boston this year. 1,500 children already are homeless. Universities have played a role in precipitating this crisis. They must play a role in its resolution, says Anna Falikoff, a junior at the college. Harvard's secret land grabs in Alston Brighton are only the most outrageous in a record of expansion insensitive to community interests. Does this sound familiar? It's exactly what UCSC does. Same thing. In fact, there were meetings last week between the mayor and UCSC, which I wasn't able to make. If anybody has a report on them, I'd love to have you call in and give us the update. My suspicion is that they aren't doing nothing around this university. They already have given a carte blanche on expanding water services to the university. Huge amounts of water were given the blank check about 2 months ago, as Scott Graham, our Scope It Out Scott kind of city council watcher, pointed out to us in some detail in a report. And by the way, he may call today to tell us what's on the agenda for this current city council coming up in 2 days here at the regular twice-monthly city council meeting, though there are, as I've mentioned, many other meetings. We're reading about Harvard University and a sleep-out to raise awareness. Not only has Harvard's developments historically driven up neighborhood rents, its 271-acre institutions are accorded a tax-exempt status based on their mission to serve the public interest. It is shamefully evident that Harvard only seeks to serve its own. Cambridge City Manager Robert Healy estimates that if Harvard were to pay property taxes on its $2.3 billion of real estate ownings, it would owe $32 million a year. Instead, Harvard negotiated a payment in lieu of taxes, so-called pilot payment in lieu of taxes, in 1990 for $1.6 million. It is not unusual for Harvard to fail to live up to community standards. While the city of Cambridge established a living wage standard of $10.25 for all city workers in 1999, Harvard continues to pay poverty-level wages as low as $6.25. There are between 1,000 and 2,000 workers at Harvard making less than the city standard. Many work two or three jobs and still struggle to pay high rent. The Harvard Student Housing Coalition, the Housing Opportunities Program, Progressive Student Labor Movement, Progressive Jewish Alliance, Harvard Square Shelter, St. James Shelter, Habitat for Humanity, Greater Boston Interfaith Organization, PBH, City Life, Vida Urbana, Youth on Fire, Bread and Jam, Solutions at Work, Boston Mobilization for Survival, and the Boston Youth for Affordable Housing call upon Harvard to pay its dues. Stephanie Stallings, junior at the college, explains we're building a makeshift city on the greens of Harvard University to start people thinking about the creative ways we can use space to include rather than exclude. Wouldn't it be nice if the groups up at Santa Cruz UCSC, the Rascals, or I guess they're called SMAC this year, Student Mobilization Action Coalition, I think it was, instead of simply showing up at these cheerleading rallies for Fitzmaurice and Crone on this rent rage stuff, which isn't really rent rage at all, it's more pushing the, you know, the particular group at 204 Riverside, and it should, their issue should be pushed, but we're going to talk about that later. 204 Riverside, of course, is the property in the Beach Flats. The city council pointedly refused to buy a year and a half ago when it could have bought it cheap and saved us all these problems. Instead, they wanted to push, push, push at the Dolphin Lee where rents were not going up. So it's they're not just crying wolf because these tenants are in real trouble, but for the city is cynically using this without explaining the history and offering to stop doing what it's been doing, spending $16 million in affordable housing to essentially destroy housing at the Dolphin Lee and destroy affordable housing in terms of the Rex Court and not deal with these issues and not deal with rent control and not deal with renter protection is unforgivable because it affects a lot of people and makes them suffer. We're talking about people who are poor, Hispanic, and in many cases, children. So I don't like it, and I don't think you should either. And I don't fall for Fitzmaurice's plaintiff cries on this issue, and I'm going to be, as I said, playing the Dolphin Lee debate that happened on Thursday, and I'll be interrupting it at various points to discuss what's really happening, at least from my perspective. Let's see here. Got lots of interesting little stories here. Las Vegas, band of teens sought in fatal beating of homeless man. Again, this is early April. A band of teenagers was being sought beginning of the month, and the fatal beating of a homeless man who had been assaulted repeatedly in recent weeks, police and an acquaintance said. The 50-year-old man was the second homeless person beaten to death recently in Las Vegas. Police found the victim about 8 a.m. in a vacant lot a few blocks west of the downtown near Valley Hospital Medical Center. Lieutenant Wayne Peterson said the man apparently died of blunt force trauma. His name was not released. The same homeless man had been treated at nearby University Medical Center in Las Vegas after being beaten March 12th by three or four teenagers, police said. Sounds a little like Joe Barker in 1999. He was beaten twice, and I guess here they finally convicted one guy, Aaron Birch, for that beating. A resident in the area reported hearing shouts early Sunday and saw three or four males walking away, police said. One was described as wearing a long white robe. A woman who said she often talked to the slain man at a bus stop in the area said he also was assaulted by three teenagers last Monday and Wednesday. Deanna Sawyer said she knew the man as Rusty. She said he told her he didn't know the reason for the attacks, but he believed the same teenagers were involved each time. Another homeless man, Arthur Kramer, died last month after he was assaulted December 27th by a group of 10 youths about a mile and a half away on the city's west side. No suspects have been arrested in that attack. And again, we're talking about Las Vegas, Nevada, not Santa Cruz, California. Although that was happening in Santa Cruz 2 years ago, I haven't heard of a lot of beatings recently, and I'm glad about that. But I also know that we've been having a little trouble getting the police chief to release the figures on the beatings for the last year, or actually the last quarter, much less the last year, which he promised to do, and which we got him to do for 1999 after extensive pressuring when there was actually a group called the Homeless Issues Task Force making him do it.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Once hitchhiking through Nevada, the upper north of Nevada,
mm-hmm.
I coming into, where was it, either Elko or Oahe, one of the two.
Uh-huh.
The local law enforcement, I guess the sheriff or the reservation police, the white reservation police, stated that we got a small town here and we got a lot of, I guess you'd call them rowdy individuals, but we don't suggest you stay here because, you know, they're gonna work you over and leave you for dead. So you just go through town and don't stay here.
When did you get this friendly message from the police?
In Nevada?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that was years ago.
Uh-huh. Well, Well, apparently the same mentality
this was
maybe
way years ago.
Could be the same mentality as operating in Las Vegas now, because this is like a month ago.
Yeah, it has a little bit to do with the small town mentality too.
Uh huh.
You know, because there is a small town fringe around Las Vegas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their twisted, sick little rites of passages, you know.
Well, I appreciate that.
And it needs to be policed, but sometimes, you know what? It might involve the son of, say, a local law enforcement, and there may be like a false accusation that the individual that was attacked did something inappropriate, and that they can use that to explain it away and to get the sympathies of their influential family members in small towns like that.
And not just in small towns like that; it can be done in Santa Cruz too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, but I appreciate the call, caller. Any more thoughts on that before I hustle you off the air?
Yeah, you always got to be on your toes about stuff like that, because those people get set off over the smallest things, you know.
Definitely.
Those individuals, they're time bombs, man. When you go and attack an individual.
Well, I don't think it's just their time bombs. I think the police have shown that they don't have any interest in, you know, making sure that marauding bands of troll busters get held to justice. They're not interested in that. And that lets them continue their reign of terror.
Well, they claim the old not much information. The victim wasn't cooperative. But that's, you know, Sealy does a lot of that. He interacts. He's actually been designated, I guess, a homeless.
Let me ask you, caller, something about Sealy. Here's an officer who I've heard from as influential a person as Karen Brock and others that somehow he's cleaned up his act at the Homeless Services Center. Have you heard any reports recently?
He's always been he's always dedicated himself to to dealing with homeless issues, like to listen where nobody else listens. Like,
so you feel he's been clean all along?
Like walking to work one night, I saw him dealing with a guy, and I noticed it because I know he's a day guy, you know. So I just noticed he was out at night.
What was he doing?
He was just talking to the guy. He was asking him how he was doing and stuff, and the guy was tank.
So you've had good experiences with
the
Sealy.
The guy was tank.
You've had good experiences with Sealy, right?
I've seen him conduct himself in the way a constable should be, you know.
Well, that's good to hear.
I've seen him be more of the mediator rather than the instigator.
That's,
you know,
good.
But I've also seen people treat him like he's some big fucking dick, and he'll have to assume that role. Just because they assume, you know, uh-huh. And they can project. I've also seen people like give him the wrong, you know what I mean? Like people don't have to come off that way too, you know.
Well, that's good to hear. I appreciate that, caller.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in.
You bet.
And that is good to hear. I'm always skeptical, but I like to have my skepticism challenged. And when I hear that police officers are doing their job, that's always good news, particularly when the job involves, to some extent, it is policing the homeless community, but I haven't heard of a lot of sleeping tickets recently in the homeless community, which is good. However, I have heard of vehicles being towed, which is not good, and I have heard of people being warned to move on, which is not good. Because people have no place to go, although, you know, if there is a specific complaint, I would like to see a mediation process for working that out. Last summer, when I worked with others to form the organization ROAR, Restore Our American Rights, a campers organization that was anticipating a possible safe sleeping zone in Harvey West, we said I had the idea of a designated person who merchants and residents could come to with a problem if they had a problem with a vehicle, and that person could then sort of be a mediator.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Good morning, Robert.
Hey, this sounds like the Pizza King, James Ney.
The Pizza Man, hey.
Well, listen, you're not only the Pizza Man, you're the chalk criminal supreme, the guy who's actually... Have you gone to court yet for your case of...
We're actually getting ready to come up on the criminal trial for chalking on the sidewalk. I'm such a criminal.
This was a year ago in, I guess, March or April when you...
It was in April.
You were down by the old Del Mar Theater. We had a homeless rights table set up, and you were chalking something to the effect of, what would let the homeless sleep?
That was one of the things. But the big thing that they really were upset about was I chalked Geneva Convention says sleep deprivation is torture.
Right.
Well, that was when they arrested me.
Well, that's the that's the kind of inflammatory language you shouldn't use around Tim Fitzmaurice, because actually at that time it was Mayor Keith Sugar, and he actually came and saw some of this stuff happening, right?
Yes, he did.
Well, what was his reaction when he saw you chalking?
He told me that he thought it was totally out of line. He actually said, how dare I do something like that, that it was doing no good, not helping things any, because it was making people uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so he chose for people to be comfortable. I guess he means rich people by that. And the rest of us can just go screw.
Well, I know that you not only were doing chalking, but you were also doing a lot of signing up of people with the Silva, not just the Silva, an initiative which David was doing a lot of energy, putting a lot of energy into, but it was an initiative to set up safe sleeping zones, to decriminalize sleep by putting it on the ballot. And this, of course, was also turned down by the city council and didn't get enough
votes. Well, that was the whole big scam, was how they got us to stop taking signatures, was they promised us, again, Mayor Sugar and his promises, that he was putting it on the ballot to stop collecting signatures. We guarantee you it's going on the ballot. Did you see it on the ballot?
No, in fact, it could have been placed on the ballot by the city council. In fact, Sugar voted against putting anything on the ballot.
Mm-hmm. He straight up lied. So did Tim Fitzmaurice.
Yeah, so did
Crone. Our current mayor.
The only people who ironically moved to put it on the ballot were people like Rotkin and Matthews, who thought that, of course, it would be defeated. But at least they they kept
Rotkin,
their word on that.
Isn't that the gentleman that when I was there speaking out for homeless? This is the gentleman who's a communist, teaches communists at the college, correct?
Socialist, I think he called himself.
Well,
Marxist-Leninist.
That's the same. Marxist-Lenin. That's communism, okay? Either way. But this is the man who, when I spoke up for my rights at city council, called me a fascist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that amazing?
Well, I remember that you were arrested at city council at this kind of tumultuous meeting. Was this at the Pie and the Pusser meeting, or was this the meeting before that? I think it was Pie and the Pusser meeting.
Yeah, it was the Pie and the Pusser meeting.
This was where we presented Rotkin with the award of a Pie and the Pusser, which he refused to take, so another hapless individual was forced to stand in his stead and get a Pie and the Pusser as being the most anti-homeless council member in Santa Cruz. And you were trying to speak at Oral Communications,
right.
And you pointed out that the Oral Communications period had not finished, and yet Mayor Sugar was closing it down.
Right, as did basically every single member of the audience, most of them extremely vocally, as I was not shouting, but there were probably 20 people that were shouting at the council over the fact that he had cut off time early, and when I was suddenly assaulted by a member of the police force. Officer Eveleth.
Now, as I understand it, there were not only one, not two, not five, not ten, but 22 police officers essentially waiting in the back room to come out and control the crowd, and that you counted these people?
Yes, I did. They had me in there, locked up in handcuffs, slammed into a corner of the wall, and a number of them, of course, made their stupid little threatening comments to me. You know, no big deal.
And
but 22 officers for a council meeting.
And you
Isn't
were actually...
Amazing?
You were held for like 45 minutes to an hour, and then you were released without charges. But, of course, this was done to defuse the protest. You actually had been one of the key people in leading a march of protesters from the town clock, right?
We led from the town clock all the way down Pacific Avenue, then turned right and went down to the city, right to the city council. This was prearranged by then-Mayor Sugar. Of course, it's Fitzmaurice now, but I have no doubt he'd do the same thing. But what he did was he prearranged with Sergeant Vogel, and told him prior to the council meeting, before anything had happened, he said to Sergeant Vogel, who has testified to this already to numerous city business people and put himself on record as stating this as fact, that Mayor Sugar came to him prior to the council meeting and stated, have two officers that know James Ney intimately and have them ready, and at my signal, he's to be drug out of the chambers.
Now, Sugar apparently did this on two other occasions, too, to other activists. For instance, he advised me in June or July, two or three months after this arrest of you, that if I brought into city council this small, portable, you'd call it a gold-painted commode to present to the city council, I called it the Golden Potty Award, for refusing to put in bathrooms or actually even porta-potties and dumpsters in areas the council had been directed to do a year ago under the Crone Commission on Bathrooms resolution or task force on bathrooms, that I would be arrested. And actually, it was Sergeant Hennig who came over and told me that, specifically, again, indicating a prior restraint of speech and a prior targeting of particular activists. And, of course, we know that David Silva, who is now suing the city council, or I should say suing the city, for the arrest for the 5150ing him, the psychiatric hold where he was dragged off in handcuffs, I guess, a month or two after your meeting.
I was there when he did it. I was the one that caught them taking him away.
This is as he was going to come up and talk about the Dolphin Lee issue in an afternoon city council session. And, they, of course, the psych ward said, there's nothing wrong with this man. We were releasing him. And now he's suing the city. Again, Sugar specifically targeted Silva beforehand. So it looks like it's not just on your occasion, but it is a pattern of harassment, unconstitutional and abusive.
It's absolutely unconstitutional. There's a simple phrase for it. It's called political suppression. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's a case of what tyrants do to continue to control the populace. Mm-hmm. Speak out, say things that are in opposition to what he wants, you'll go to jail. That's the message that this city council is sending out to the people.
Mm-hmm.
Very clearly says that we don't care what the law is. You will do what we tell you, or our Nazi brutes will come drag you away. And I very clearly, I hope any police officers listening know that this is James Ney, and I very clearly called you Nazi.
Right. Well, I think that certainly the practice of pre-targeting particular activists by name has to be wrong. I mean, if somebody commits a crime, you can, call them to account. And the business of going after people at city council meeting who are simply trying to speak.
Right, on a political whim.
Right, this is in the case of... you're being denied your right to address a public assembly, which means you're being denied your Brown Act protection.
Correct.
Brown Act guarantees your right to participate in public meetings.
Correct.
And this has, I think, really grave ramifications for democracy in Santa Cruz, because if you have to be afraid to come to a city council meeting, this is going to chill public participation, wouldn't you think?
Exactly. Political repression. This is how tyrants stay in power. They scare anybody who would speak something intelligent, logical, and thoughtful out by political repression. They say, you speak, you go to jail. Because they can't do it legally, they have to scare you into it. And that's exactly what this is.
Or they get a restraining order that bars you from peaceful assembly at the public areas like the city council offices, which was gotten by Tim Fitzmaurice through Anna Brooks, his administrative aide.
That's going to go down in flames here shortly.
I would hope so, although frankly I have no confidence that the judges won't just rubber stamp it, so it's hard to tell what's going to happen. Fitzmaurice will be appearing on May 29th, and we are successfully subpoenaed him. He tried to say, I'm the mayor, and I don't need to appear.
You ain't no president, buddy. What time is that?
What time is what?
April 29th.
I think it's at 9 o'clock in the morning in Department 5.
Department 5.
But
be there or be square. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Let's all get out and watch the mayor squirm.
Well, I think you'll have an opportunity to speak your piece on Tuesday. You told me, James, you were coming
to
the...
Absolutely, I was coming to that next.
You're coming to a city council meeting in a day.
Everybody out there listening, I'm saying right now, I run a pizza factory. I'm a business community member. I'm very well liked in this community, in this San Lorenzo Valley. I'm an extreme supporter of every charity there is, including the River Street Shelter, which I feed them on a regular basis out of my pocket. And I am going to city council, and I am challenging anybody out there in the listening audience to be there. I'll bring pizzas for everybody to eat, and I challenge you to come and stand up and speak to this city council, or at least be there in force and show them that it's time for a change. Because I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to speak about the issues. I'm also going to challenge the city council at that point to the fact that I am spending hundreds of dollars a month, and I make a lousy hourly wage. I work 40 hours a week. Actually, I work 100, but I get paid 40 hours a week, okay, on a lowly salary. Hourly salary, yet I'm spending hundreds a month on the poor. What is the council spending on them? What is coming? I'm going to ask each individual member.
The council has
right now. What do you do for the poor?
The council has to preserve its money for the Pogonip Clubhouse restoration. You see.
Oh yeah, don't you know? Or fixing up the golf course.
Well, of course, what they'll tell you is what they did on Thursday is they are appropriating money for a family shelter in 2 or 3 years. I mean, it's going to be. Or is it? It may even be 1 or 2 years. I think it's 2002 or 2003.
1 or 2 years is still too long.
Right. Well, and
okay.
How many
years have we been hearing them say they're going to do that?
Right. Well,
okay.
I don't quite know if it's locked in place, but it is getting very specific, and it may well be there. But what I do know is that April 15th has come and gone. The homeless, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program's armory, winter armory shelter, is closed down with no substitute. And if you know, I keep hearing people at the Homeless Services Center shelter who are clients there say, well, why don't you just open up these bays at night for people to sleep in? And of course, Ken Cole and others shudder at the thought. They don't want to run a nighttime shelter on, you know, they think it would be a logistical nightmare, and that's fine. I can appreciate that. But, you know, there's got to be places for people to sleep at night, and if there aren't, people got to take whatever they can. And the most obvious thing is to take places that are, say, they're a homeless service center. But, for example, when Mary Curie did that, when she went on a bus anyway and said, you can't go on the bus, and she went on the bus anyway, they called the police at the armory, and they arrested her and took her away in handcuffs.
In handcuffs?
Yes.
75-year-old lady.
That's correct.
Why the hell? Again, that comes back to not just this cruddy people running this so-called homeless service center, which they are just nothing but a bunch of cruds, but it also goes to the police department, which why the hell would they need to put handcuffs on a 75-year-old tiny woman? Okay? Because they're big men? Oh, isn't that the way Nazism works?
Well, they would probably tell you that it is their policy to do that.
That's crap.
However, she claims that it injured her wrists and hurt her wrists, and she's...
That's why they do it, so they can injure and hurt you.
Had some photos taken. Well, now Michael Schmidt would disagree with you, and he disagreed publicly at the city council. He happened to be doing the police academy ride-along that night, and he says that the police were unusually reasonable with Mary, that they were just doing their job, but they preferred not to do it, but they had to do it because they had a citizen complaint from the... Well, a formal complaint from the Homeless Services Center. And, of course, charges were dropped, but not because the Homeless Services Center didn't want to prefer them, but because a DA refused to prosecute once, I guess it was Becky Johnson, who came into court, found an attorney, Peter Leeming, who brought this matter directly before the judge and said, here's a 75-year-old woman, you're going to prosecute her for trespassing in a city where there's no legal place for people to sleep. And she was trying to do it at night and use the legal shelter, the Winter Armory shelter.
Right.
Now I gotta tell. I will say this: Mary Curie has got her cranky side.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt that a 75-year-old woman has cranky sides, and they can at times be irritable and hard to get along. But the point is, they're 75,
mm-hmm.
okay? And we're supposed to revere our elders, okay? And yes, we're supposed to accept the fact that occasionally they get like that, okay? It doesn't mean that because they're like that, they don't deserve a place to sleep at night.
Right. Well,
okay?
I
want to go back to this little statement you said earlier. Talked about, you know, using the Homeless Service Center and Mr. Cole saying, oh, it's just a logistics nightmare and that's too much work. Well, my question is this: why the hell did he take the job?
Well, no, I got to be honest with you.
No, I'm asking this seriously. The question is, why the hell did he take the job?
Well,
that's what his job is to find out, do, and make places for the homeless to go. Not to snivel and bitch and say, oh, it's a logistics problem. That's his goddamn job.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I'm not giving you a direct quote from him. I think.
Oh, I've heard him say things like that before.
I think
it's
that he might say something like that.
It's just too much work to do that.
Yeah.
We couldn't do that. That'd be unimaginably hard to do. I've heard him say that numerous times, that the work is just too much. It's just too hard to do. Well, bullshit. That's what the hell. You know, why don't we take his damn salary? We take his damn salary and you could feed all the, and house the homeless people.
Do you know
how much money that son of a bitch makes?
No, not actually.
Yeah, close to $100,000 a year.
Well, I know that there wasn't enough money for soap and for detergent in the hygiene bays in the
last
couple weeks.
On a regular basis.
Well,
it's
that was
always
certainly
like that.
That's what the report was at the homeless community meeting last week, which they held on Wednesday
afternoon.
There's
sure always enough money to pay his salary.
Yeah, you know, I know.
He's got food on his table. He's got a bed to sleep in. He's got a shower, soap, shampoo, and all the niceties of life. He goes out to eat on a regular basis. Does he care about the homeless? Hell no. And I am not ashamed to stand up and state it. I know everybody else is pussyfooting around. Oh, got to be nice. He's got to run the center. Bullshit.
He took
the job. It's time for him to do his job.
Hey, for people who want to give a call to Ken Cole and tell him to do his job, his phone number is 458-6020. And you can call even today, and you'll get into a message machine labyrinth, and you can actually dial him and tell him your concerns. I think I actually saw him at a public meeting on Thursday when they were talking about expanding the Homeless Services Center, and there was a homeless woman named Kathy who was talking to him and saying, I want you to tell the city council to end the sleeping ban. And he said, no, you should go talk to Robert Norris. He's the activist who's working on that issue.
Yeah, what a joke, huh? Seriously, what a joke.
Yeah, well,
I
think...
supposed to be the man that's supposed to be fighting for the homeless? Every time I see him, it's always, I have not seen him do one thing for the homeless. Every time he backs down, he changes it, he wishy-washies, he paddles out of it, says, oh, no, that can't be done. Oh, no, don't speak up and say that. Oh, goodness, no.
Well, I got to say that Cole and I have not been on the warmest terms for the last 6 to 9 months, and I think he's taken a much more of a social service provider limited perspective on this. I think he sees his job as, you know, getting the grant money that's needed to run
to pay
the,
his salary.
I think he would say that he's doing, I mean, he's not just paying his salary, he's providing for, you know, daytime facilities for homeless people in terms of switchboards and telephones and lockers and 1.5 meals a day and winter armory shelter and a little bit of summer shelter, slightly expanded, although it looks like generally there's not been a major expansion or any kind of significant expansion since there hasn't been any real shelter put online since Above the Line opened in the county, and that isn't really available to people at an emergency shelter basis.
Nope, not available at all.
So I will say that I think that if social service providers were more outspoken about the need to immediately set up a campground, about the need to immediately address some of the key issues like sleep, we'd be in better shape. It should be said that he was quite a clear advocate against the whole camping ordinance when he was a member of the Homeless Issues Task Force. He was the vice chair of that body, and he spoke up quite frequently and quite eloquently, and I appreciated that, but I think...
And then went behind everybody's back to push through a canceling of the ordinance.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the whole thing of it. No, we're not going to produce it. No, we're not going to announce it. Yeah, he'd sit there and speak eloquently for it, but what did he do? That was my problem with that.
It is true.
Every time a vote came up to do something about it, it was Ken Cole that buried it.
Are you talking about in the Homeless Issues Task Force?
Yes, I'm talking about the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Well, I know...
Every time there was a chance to do anything, Ken Cole buried it as the vice chair.
Huh. Now, I have a different experience.
A few times I was there. That's why I stopped going.
Really? Interesting. I know that on the two votes on the camping ordinance, he voted in favor of abolishing it. So I liked his votes on those two issues.
I said yes on that. But when it actually came to the meat and potatoes of actually doing anything, when it was known that nothing was going to be done along that line, and there were other things brought forward, such as publishing their remarks or speaking out, who was the most ordinary person saying, no, don't tell the public. No, the city council doesn't want us to. We can't do that.
Well, I think Paul Brindell certainly deserves a close seconds.
Yep,
if that's
I put Paul Brindell right there with him.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true. They. I know Paul Brindell talked about let's not go to city council in the winter of 1999-2000 and demand ending the sleeping ban, because if we throw a press conference now, it'll take away from the final report when we do our press conference. But
which was all a big scam.
But
there was no final report and no press conference.
There was a final report.
Well, I know, but you get what I'm saying.
There was a final report, but there was never a press conference.
Right.
And so Brindell never had the press conference.
And the final report was never actually presented out to the public. It was done in quiet to the city council.
Right. I mean, well,
private session. Well, yeah, come on. Move them to 1 o'clock in the afternoon when they know nobody will be there.
Right. It's true. It was publicly done, but it was done at a time that was not particularly visible for most people.
Right,
and not
announced, really, to them, other than a couple little papers put up on the wall. They didn't go out and say, hey, we're holding these meetings. Everybody come down here. It's time now. It's finished.
That's right. And, in fact, when they did hold the Homeless Issues Task Force meetings for the city council, Mayor Sugar assured that people had to wait 3 hours to do any public comment.
Right, because the public comment was supposed to be first, but he saved it for last.
He also violated the Brown Act by not allowing public comment while the city council voted on measure after measure.
Absolutely. Every one of those was a Brown Act violation.
Anyway, we see this happening, but what's the answer, James? How are we to proceed now that, you know, there's been some fragmentation in the activist community? I mean, you have, you know, I've been trying to get, I'm still trying. I guess there's this big thing with Steve Argues, I should say the Rent Rage 2 rally coming up in a week at the town clock, in which there will be food provided by India Joe Schultz, or former India Joe Schultz. And so we have some things happening. You'll be at city council speaking for 3 minutes and distributing pizza. Possibly everyone will be talking with their mouth full, you know. What do you think?
I think it's time for people to start getting up and speaking. It's time for people to stop sitting on their asses and saying, oh, well, somebody else will take care of this.
Uh-huh.
You know, they sit there and say, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, but do they do anything? No, they sit in their house and moan and groan. Well, it's time for all those people out there who are sitting on their asses to get off their asses and do something.
You're going
to
make me get up and walk around the room now, James.
Well, I'm saying put your money where your mouth is. Okay? And anybody who cares to challenge me on that, let's see what you've done for the community. Okay?
Well, for those who
I'm a lowly, hourly paid wager person, barely making it, barely making it, and yet I spend hundreds a month on saving this world. What do you do?
So, 420-5017 is the City Council hotline, which I know you'll be calling today, James, in order to express your view to the mayor and to the City Council that it's past time to take some action around ending the sleeping ban and ending the injunction. And I hope to see you at City Council on Tuesday. Maybe, who knows, the Monday morning group is going to be at the Homeless Services Center on Monday at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's open to everybody but me, so if anybody wants to go, they can indeed.
To go crash it! Hey!
Well, I would suggest that not that people necessarily disrupt anything, but if they want to be a part of that process and look in on it and see how it's going, they can. It's happening at the Homeless Services Center.
Go in and not disrupt, but speak out for your rights.
Yeah, I think that's always a good idea. Anyway, thank you for calling in, James, and I'll be looking forward to that pizza. I don't know if I will be at that Tuesday council meeting because I may be in Berkeley. There's an actual meeting on the sleeping ban repeal happening in Berkeley. So.
Okay, on the Berkeley repeal?
Yeah, the Berkeley
repeal. Cool.
So that may happen, and if anybody wants to come to that Berkeley caravan up there, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Thank you, James. I'm gonna.
And the rest of you, let's see how many of you can be there Tuesday night.
All right.
Let's shout that out over the airwaves. Tell them, be there or be square. Stand up for your rights. Let's see what you really are.
Thank you, James.
Talk to you later, Robert.
And there's a man even more outspoken than I am. That's James Ney, who's going to court to fight the chalking ban. That's what we originally began talking with him about.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Mary Corey.
Hi, Mary.
I just wanted to say I heard part of your program.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to let you know that there was more than what you had on that sheet.
Why don't you tell us about what actually, you know, fill us in, Mary.
Well,
now, you were arrested up at the armory for just trying to lie down and get some sleep, right?
Right.
Want to give us an account of what happened there?
At the armory or before?
Why don't you start at the armory and then you can work backward?
Oh, well, I was laying down. I had my mat and everything ready to sleep. I told the, and then the police, the cop came in. And I heard him ask somebody where I was, and they pointed me out. And he came over and said, you're trespassing, you know, like that. I says, how could I be trespassing when I signed up for this trip? I said, Kurt gave me a hard time over there. Well, I shouldn't mention that yet. And I had smelled that cigarette smoke for 2 hours.
While you were waiting in line to go on to the armory bus?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right. And then I told him I'm very sick, you know. And he said, do you want me to get you an ambulance? I said, who's paying for it? Me. He says, you. I said, well, forget it. So then he said, after that, he arrested me. He put the handcuffs on me while I was laying down, and he had this other man, plainclothesman, drag me out and put me in the car. I kept telling him the handcuffs were hurting me,
mm-hmm.
and I have a picture to show the bruise on my right hand,
mm-hmm.
which took quite a while to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go to the bathroom. They wouldn't let me, for I had to sit over there an hour while he was filling out papers outside the county jail.
Mm-hmm.
Then he put me in a room with another woman with a toilet, just a toilet, and we were locked in.
Mm-hmm.
Then, it was pretty late when I get out of there. And he said he can go. I said, where am I going?
This was like 11 or 12 o'clock at night? Or
later.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I didn't know where to go.
So you had no place, no legal place to sleep?
No,
at that
so
point?
I didn't get any sleep that night. And I was feeling real bad. I got worse.
Now, wait a minute. Didn't you, in fact, call up a private person and get her to open up a tent for you?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's what I remember.
Yeah, but it was
But you got lucky.
Late.
I don't know that would have necessarily been available for you. And, of course, I don't know if you slept. You probably slept legally if the tent was in a backyard in a fenced-in area. So that is one of the few exceptions to the camping ban in Santa Cruz. You can sleep on private property in a backyard or a non-visible place from a side yard. So, but you had other things you wanted to say about this issue. What
yeah,
else did
well,
you want to say?
Well, when I was at the homeless yard, whatever you call it.
Homeless service center?
Yeah, where we wait for the bus.
Uh-huh.
Kurt was trying to aggravate me to start an argument, I think.
Now, Kurt is an employee with the homeless
yeah,
service center?
Yeah, he takes care of the yard there.
Uh-huh.
And he's one of them. St. Clair's another one. And then there was a big mole of dirt, and he had somebody's dog, you know, playing it. You know, he was aggravating the dog, so he'd make noise, bark, and all the stuff went flying all over. I didn't think that was funny, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Dogs aren't supposed to be loose in there. So then he followed me around. I don't know what else he was doing to aggravate me. I went from one place to another trying to read. By that time, 2 hours, I didn't get any one thing read, you know, one article, and it was time to leave.
And this was when you were waiting for the bus up to the armory on the day on the day you were arrested? Or?
Right.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Well, what have you been doing since? Have you been barred from the program at the Homeless Services Center?
Yeah, for quite a while, yeah. Over a month
and
now.
Is this because you're a violent person who's been physically attacked someone?
I never physically. I don't hit people.
Now, were you barred because you showed up drunk and staggering around with a bottle in your hand?
No, I don't drink.
Well, perhaps you were barred because you were stealing people's property.
No, I never stole anybody's stuff.
Well, what was the reason that they barred you for? I guess it was originally for 30 days from this program, and now how long are you barred from it for?
Been over a month. I don't know, a month, maybe in 2 weeks.
So why do they feel that you are a person that can't be allowed in this program? Is it because you had some harsh words for some
well,
of the providers?
I don't know exactly.
Have you had an opportunity to file a grievance with Ken Cole and the Homeless Services Center on this issue?
No, not yet.
Well, you mean you haven't taken the opportunity, or they've refused to allow you the chance? Which?
Well, I've been kind of busy looking for an apartment. I'm back on the housing, you know.
You're looking for an apartment. You can so you actually have the money. If one were available, you could rent one, you think?
Yeah, but not for $1,000. And that's what they seem to be. If they're halfway decent, mm-hmm. That's what they go for.
I hear you. Is there anything more you want to say to the Free Radio folks out here? Mary. We're talking to Mary Curry, who not only as she, well, she actually went to Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice a year ago seeking assistance when she was evicted from her housing, and for a year, of course, you haven't really been able to get too much assistance, right? I guess Tim on one or two occasions did take some money out of his own pocket and offered you a motel room for a night.
No, he says he can't afford a motel room, but... What makes him think I can afford one? If he can't afford one, and he has two jobs, how can I afford one and I only get a, you know?
Well, no, but didn't on one occasion he give you some money for a motel room?
No,
he never did.
Never.
Okay, I thought I understood he had, but maybe I misunderstood on that. Well.
His wife gave me $20. Well, for food, she said. He said.
I see.
It wasn't him, he said, from my wife.
Well, I know that you've been seeking lodging from private individuals, and you've had some success at the Elm Street Mission, too, but you've You've also encountered some problems there.
Where?
The Elm Street Mission.
Well, the thing is, I've tried to get into that bit with the services. You have to go to 3 hour service, church service. 3 hours.
3 hours of...
till 9:30 at night.
Straight religious propaganda, right?
Yeah, from 7 to 9. If you don't go, they don't want you there. Mm. And then they have Bible class almost every day and things like that. And then you have to wait on the public. I didn't mind doing that. I did it a few times. And that's, you know, the homeless. For food,
mm-hmm.
They come in for meals, you know.
I gotcha.
About 3-4 times a week. And then he threw me out because somebody told him that I swear and cuss. She didn't want me there because, you know, once in a while I ask her to do something for me. She's such a lazy thing. I don't want to mention her name, you know.
Well, you are a cranky woman, but I don't know if that's a good enough reason to exclude you.
No, I'm not cranky.
Well, I'm
if I don't get my proper rest, maybe I am.
There you go. Well, anything more you want to say, Mary? I'm going to roll on you because
no, that's all I have to say right now.
Hey, thank you very much. If people want to know more about Mary's situation, I've actually we have a letter that you have written to the Homeless Services Center talking about this trespass arrest, which you can get through HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Just give a call to 423-HUF.
Oh, and I want to add,
mm-hmm.
If anybody has an apartment for rent, please get in touch with me.
What number is that, Mary?
457, unfurnished apartment, 457-9754, extension 1306.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take you now to the Family Planning Health Center Abortion Clinic, where a group of fetuses are holding a pro-life demonstration.
And furthermore, we have to unite to stop the fascist murder and oppression of our brothers and sisters. Stop abortion now! Stop abortion now!
Stop abortion now! Stop abortion now!
There was something peculiar about the fetus protest that day, although I couldn't quite put my finger there with the usual chant.
No more suction, no more strife. We all have a right to life.
The usual handing out of flyers.
Here, sir, would you like a flyer?
No, I suppose. What are you protesting?
We're with the FFA, the Free Fetus Association, and we're here to protest fetus murder. Did you know that each year thousands of us are ripped and then tossed aside like so much garbage?
My, that's terrible!
The usual sign saying fetuses opposed to NAFTA and GATT. But there was something in the air that bothered me. A tension so thick you could cut it with a knife. I knew there was gonna be trouble.
And furthermore, we fetuses today are expressing our solidarity with the black struggle.
Large numbers of riot police began moving into formation across the street. Raging against the injustices of society, some of the fetuses set a dumpster on fire. It was then that the pigs made their move, wading into the crowd with their batons swinging.
Take that, yellow punk! Ow!
The fetuses began to flee, some taking refuge in the homes of neighborhood residents who, disgusted with the heavy-handedness of the police, opened their doors to the protesters.
In here, quick!
Oh, thank you very much!
Seeing the very people they ostensibly were serving and protecting, giving refuge now to supposed criminals, the police turned their wrath upon the residents of this once quiet neighborhood.
Open that door or I'll rip your lungs out!
Such an alliance against their authority was an unthinkable outrage.
You little shit! I know where you live and I'm coming back!
Many of the protesters got away, but others weren't so lucky. In all, 279 fetuses were arrested and held in jail for 2 days. Mayor Frank Fetus praise the actions of the police.
Sure, maybe they committed murder and mayhem, but overall, they did a good job.
And even though the police make their homes in such places as Eureka and San Diego, the mayor accused the demonstrators of being outside agitators.
That's right! They don't belong here. They're un-Americans. Yeah, that's it.
The two big daily newspapers gave the mayor a public pat on the back for tending to business as usual while ignoring the hopes and aspirations of the people was their preoccupation, too.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Scientific poll shows mayor's popularity shoots up. Re-election victory a foregone conclusion. Dissidents and outside agitators may as well not even vote. Extra, extra.
But the fetuses were not to be silenced. Supporters pointed out that fetuses have an unemployment rate of 100%, highest in the nation, and that when it comes to affirmative action programs, fetuses are left out of the picture altogether. Soon it was pretty clear to everyone that the fetuses were getting a raw deal.
Fetuses United will never be defeated! Fetuses United will never be defeated!
The Reverend Jesse Fetus came to town, spoke at a rally, and told the fetuses to keep hope alive.
Keep hope alive! Keep hope alive!
Meanwhile, Governor Fetus Wilson stepped into the picture and called the Reverend a rabble-rouser. The Reverend responded by calling for jobs and health care. Some said the town wasn't big enough for the two and that a showdown was inevitable.
Vagabonds!
Scallywag!
But the issue of what to do about the fetuses just wouldn't go away, and the fetuses themselves continued to protest and organize.
We must stand together and fight!
Meanwhile, the government did everything it could to discredit the movement.
Time now for the evening news. Good evening. The FBI announced today that the bombing of the Oklahoma Federal Building has been definitely linked to a group calling itself the Fetus Liberation Front.
For the skeptics among us, no, it was just another day, another long, hot summer.
This message has been brought to you by the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe in the belief that if fetuses had rights, they'd be out fighting for them like the rest of us. And if they ever did dare to have the temerity to do so, they'd all be beaten up and thrown in jail.
And that's a classic from the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe of Berkeley Free Radio. Now, I guess it's Liberation Radio, Berkeley Liberation Radio. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz here, and we are at 427-3772 on your phone line or 96.3 FM on your radio dial. Take your pick, but if you want, give us a call. I will certainly respond. And I'll be here for another half hour on the last gasps of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, which airs twice a week today, every Sunday from 11 to 1:30, and every Thursday evening from 6 to 8. And if you want to catch us off air, give a call at 423-4833. That's the line for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And you can also get a copy of the Street Shit Sheet, the homeless newsletter that tells it like it is, even when it stinks. I thought we had a phone call there for a moment, but it looks like the caller has gone away. Call back, caller, if you want to be on the air. Be happy to pick up on you. I'm looking right now at the SCAN newsletter. That's Santa Cruz Action Network. I've gone through an earlier rant describing how this group, after the membership votes in strong principles on protecting the rights of tenants or the rights of homeless people against the sleeping ban or against the demolition of their apartments, as was the case last May and the Dolphin Lee business, the SCAN Steering Committee, which has a more conservative bent and often includes board members of Mercy Charities Housing, like Bernice Belton, sabotages that effort and does what the City Council, in essence, wants it to do, or should we say doesn't want to offend the City Council. And I'm looking at their newsletter, and I will be getting into that in just a moment, but first this.
Hey, Robert, it's Scott.
Hey, Scott, you been listening into the show?
Just a little bit. last 10 minutes or so.
Oh, you caught that fetus's rights rally, eh?
Yeah.
Well, now you're a man who's been at many of the city council meetings, though I don't know if anybody could have caught up with all the city council meetings this last week. God, there were, I don't know how many hours of city council meetings Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, but there is a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, and you, I guess, have the agenda, right?
I don't have it in front of me, but I've seen it.
Yeah, I notice not too much exciting. I guess there's the usual closed session at 1:30, which doesn't have, for the first time, the acquisition of the Lee Apartments on it, interestingly enough. And then there's the afternoon session, which mainly is concerned with sort of a lot of street closings for different festive events, which I don't have too much problem with. But there are a couple of items on there that, as I remember, had I the time or the insight, I might want to delve into. Anything you noticed?
Well, there's a couple of... There's the garbage rate increase, which I think, you know, a lot of the citizenry should be up in arms about. And
tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what it is the city is changing the way they're collecting garbage, and one of the changes is they're going to institute this green waste policy where people can put their lawn clippings and bush clippings and whatnot into a separate can, which will then be, you know, once it gets to the dump, they'll compost it, and then the city will be selling that compost to some company that will take it and do something with it. And because the city is going to be selling the stuff, it should be, you know, you would think, or one would suspect, that it may be a type of system where it's not going to actually increase any kind of cost, but they're actually going to increase the cost of, you know, for a number of people, depending on the size of can they have at their homes, it's going to double people's garbage rates.
Hmm.
And, you know, I know at the last meeting when they had it on the agenda, because they have to do this twice to change these laws.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second reading. And at the last meeting, there was, you know, a number of citizens that normally don't attend meetings that showed up and complained about this, but there wasn't a real outcry, which is something it really would take to get them to pay attention.
Well, there was a real outcry in another matter you mentioned to me, I guess yesterday or the day before, regarding El Centro. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, the city is talking now of building some, you know, affordable senior housing on Galt Street, and they want to move all the seniors that are currently living in El Centro to this place on Galt Street. And they've been planning this for months with Mercy Charities, who runs the El Centro, and they didn't have the decency to inform the elderly people that live there about it.
I mean, not only didn't the city council inform them, but the Mercy Charities, which runs El Centro, and I presume would be building the new project on Galt Street and then running it, as this monopoly service provider apparently is given every single contract that comes down the pike, has been prone to do.
Right, yeah. I mean, neither of them contacted the residents to ask them for any sort of input or even tell them it was on the agenda or it was in the planning stages.
Now, this is actually on the redevelopment agency agenda at 5 o'clock for Tuesday, so if people want to come and slap the city council across the chops on this issue, might be an appropriate time, although apparently you said that the residents themselves, these elderly residents, did a little chop-slapping, right?
Well, yeah, they found out about it the day later, after the city council had voted to, you know, start the preliminary work on this project. They were informed about it the next day, not by the city or by
Mercy Charities.
You know, a private individual asked them, well, you know, what do you think about all this? And none of them knew about it.
Well,
and so they all went down to the Mercy offices and raised holy hell. They don't want to leave. You know, a lot of them initially had issues with being downtown because of the noise and all that kind of stuff, but it is centrally located. They're in walking distance to the Loud Nelson, where they can go have their discounted noon meal with a bunch of other senior citizens. for them. The other problem is that a lot of them, the doctors they see are in the downtown area. And if they're out there in Gulf Street, then that brings another problem of, you know, being able to go to the doctor. Or the people that are in wheelchairs. Right now in El Centro, they can, you know, take the elevator down to the ground floor and then cruise up and down the mall, cruise to Zanotto's on their wheelchair. If they're on Gulf Street, they're going to have a much harder time just doing things like shopping. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's unless there's some sort of transportation that's viable and amenable to these people that is part of this project, I think it's going to make a lot of these people's lives a lot more difficult than they currently are.
Now, did you yourself see the folks go to the Mercy Charities housing, and did you talk to the folks at the El Centro, and did they say to you, we weren't informed of this until after it passed, or did you get this from your... Where are you getting this information from?
Well, I'm getting it from the person that actually went and talked to them about it.
I see. And so it's second-hand information, but he says that they were surprised that this was happening, and he then heard...
They were not surprised. They were outraged.
They were outraged, and then they then took their outrage to the Mercy Charities housing people?
Right.
And he said that's what they told him, or he saw them go, or...
I believe that he actually saw them go there and raise a big stink about it.
We may have to bring in this mystery source of yours with, of course, his voice disguised and do an interview with him directly.
Yeah, that may be possible.
Because I understand your credibility has recently been challenged. You're no longer invited to the monthly constituent meetings that Fitzmaurice and his supporters hold because of your associations with certain questionable broadcasters.
Yeah, I think it's this guy, what's his name, Ostracize Rob.
Ostracize Rob. This is your rather amusing way of referring to the very individual who is interviewing you at this moment.
Right.
I see. Well, tomorrow is a SKIN, Santa Cruz In Action Network, meeting at the Loudoun Nelson Center. I think it's at 6:30 or something, or 7 o'clock. Let me double check here. I'm looking at the SKIN newsletter.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of skinny. I was going to say that I find it very amusing that they have this Council Watch section, which gives you the votes of all the council members, supposedly to keep tabs on the SKAN-endorsed council members, which include Sugar, Crone, Fitzmaurice, certainly, and Byers at the time, although I think Rodkin and Matthews and Hernandez kind of strayed from the path. And now almost the entire city council is SKAN-endorsed, except Mark Premack and Scott Kennedy, right?
Right.
Well, I noticed that there are a number of votes that are missing. One of them, of course, is the vote to proceed with the Dolphin Lee project, cutting out the Lee tenants and essentially doing nothing around the guarantees. That was a vote of the city council, which was five to two, actually, with Hernandez. Wasn't it Hernandez and Crone dissenting in July of 2000, July 25th, I believe. The key vote on the Dolphin Lee, and it's not in this chronology. And then a week later, there were actually two key votes, one on July 25th and one on August 1st, talking about not putting the sleeping ban on the ballot as an initiative.
Right.
And neither of these votes, for some strange reason, appears in the Council Watch section.
Well, SKAN doesn't like to get involved in controversial issues. You know, they want to stay keep controversy at arm's length because, you know, their own credibility is at risk. If they have anything controversial, it may split the SKAN membership, you know, which we saw happen last summer when the SKAN general membership voted to do a forum on the Dolphin Lee and insist on guarantees, and then the SKAN steering committee decided that the general membership was out of their minds and the steering committee could just, like, do away with all these votes that the general membership took.
Well, it's interesting. I have here a whole set of SKAN bylaws. Apparently, there's a new set of bylaws that they are proposing. But they said usually they would underline the new wording and put a line through the old wording. But since several sections were moved and renumbered, it would become very confusing and lengthy. So they're not doing that. So you can't apparently tell where they're making changes in their bylaws, which will be voted on tomorrow night.
But I don't think anywhere in the new or the old bylaws does the steering committee have the power to reverse a vote of the general membership.
it's interesting. I would hope not, because it would seem to me the general membership is the key group. Let's see, membership meetings, functions of a membership meeting, take positions on ballot measures, make commitments of organizational support, adopt a work program and budget, amend bylaws, give direction to the steering committee, and take action on any matter before it. The addition or deletion of an agenda item at a membership meeting shall require a majority vote of the members present. Yeah, I don't. I'm concerned about these bylaws because I think, and again, I'm not. I did finally get from Coordinator Tom Shaver, after much discussion, a copy of the old bylaws, but I haven't yet had the time to compare them verbatim with the new bylaws. I am a SCAN member, nominally speaking, although I think my dues run out this year, and I'm going to give them doo-doo rather than due, so to speak, because I don't think that... Well, I had some problem. You were at the SCAN membership meeting in, I guess, last fall?
Wasn't it in the middle of the summer, July or August or something?
Well, actually, you were at the one where I'm talking about the later one that happened right before, around the election time. And this was held in the community room of the police station, of all places.
Right, yeah, I was at that meeting also.
And this is a meeting where I, Bernard Klitzner, and Becky Johnson ran for the steering committee, you may remember.
Right, and they put out ballots, and people voted.
Before our nominations.
Right.
It was sort of like the old Red Queen's approach, judgment first and trial afterward.
Right.
So I thought that was rather amusing. And, of course, what this issue really was had to do with the SCAN's... bizarre, actually not very bizarre, it was rather quite comprehensible to me, but it's outrageous behavior, the steering committee's decision to abolish its own housing committee because the housing committee was bringing issues to city council that the membership had agreed on, namely the Dolphin League guarantees and the sleeping ban, but that the SCAN steering committee thought was detracting from the possibilities of SCAN candidates winning the election, detracting from the, the smoothness with which the Dolphin Lee proposal was rushing through and so forth, and they just simply eliminated the housing committee, and then they also disaffiliated themselves from the SCAN forum. Sounds like what's going on there, Scott? Are you being approached by a member of SCAN, perhaps?
No, I was just talking to somebody that was walking by. I had to give them a message from a friend of theirs that they've been looking for.
Aha! So you're actually out there on the streets.
Yeah, I'm right in front of Loud and Ellison, stones throw away from SCAN headquarters.
Does that mean you're going to start throwing stones? Now, come. I'm not allowed in SCAN headquarters, you may remember.
Well, I think you are as long as you have somebody there monitoring your every move. Right?
No, that's the Green Party. The Green Party allows monitors. SCAN is just simply I'm barred from their headquarters.
I thought that as long as Tom was there, you could come in.
Well, actually, the story is that he was going to give...
I guess it's called the
lodging law. Lodging law that allows them to arrest or ticket if people that sleep.
Right, you're thinking of, that's 647J, the state law, but it was a resolution before the Berkeley City Council called the Home...